You're listening to Ping, a podcast by APNIC discussing all things related to measuring the internet. I'm your host, George Michelson. This time, I'm talking to Phil Renyo from DNS OARC. Phil is the new president, replacing Keith Mitchell as of the start of 2024. Phil has a long history of engagement in internet development. Before taking this current position, he was working with the Network Startup Resource Centre, or NSRC. DNS OARC, or the Domain Name Systems Operations Analysis and Research Centre, was founded by the Internet Systems Consortium, ISC, and CADA, the Centre for Applied Internet Data Analysis, based in the San Diego Supercomputer Centre. It was established as an independent legal entity, a 501c3 not-for-profit, in 2008, 4 years after its founding in 2004. It's a member organisation for DNS operators, network researchers, software implementers and others to share data, common problems and solutions in a secure and trustable environment. Perhaps it's best known for its role managing the day in the life, or DITL activity, collecting a snapshot of DNS traffic at root name servers and other significant sources of DNS. But OARC is about much more than this, with regular workshops and a software development activity. Phil and I discussed this at the recent APRICOT APNIC 57 meeting held in Bangkok, Thailand, where OARC held a workshop. So here I am at APRICOT in Bangkok, and I'm sitting with Phil Renyo, who is the director of DNS OARC. Phil, welcome to Ping.
Thank you, George. Good morning, and thank you for having me here to be able to talk a little bit about the DNS OARC.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? DNS OARC isn't the only string on your bow. You've been working with NSRC for quite a long time, haven't you?
Right. So before I started at the DNS OARC, as president is the role that
President, not director. Do you want to restart on that?
Actually, no, this is fine.
This
is kind of funny. As of course, I expected it to be a director position, but apparently there's something about a nonprofit and a board in the United States requiring a title of president.
Right. So you are the president of DNS OARC, and you're replacing Keith Mitchell, who was the founding president.
Keith Mitchell, now the whole history in full details, I don't remember exactly at which point, but Keith Mitchell was brought in while at ISC on
yes.
the request of Paul Vixie
yes.
to head the DNS OARC.
It started in 2003, and he was brought on board to give it some structural form and actually energize the room and make things happen.
That's right, and also I think one of the missions, I'll get back to my own background, but the original mission was, was more of a trust group initially, a trust group and a data
yep.
sharing initiative.
Yeah.
And then what happened is being inside ISC, it was a great idea. A lot of people supported it, but the consensus was that the organization had more future outside ISC. So there was
yep.
a transition period, and Keith was brought on to, as you say, give it a life and make it fly. And turn it into its own entity.
But your own history, NSRC, as I mentioned, but you have a long history of involvement in DNS. You're part of .fr as well, aren't you?
So my own story, as you mentioned, I was a part of the Network Startup Resource Center, and technically still am related to them in some fashion. Although I don't really have a lot of time for their activities, but this goes back really to the late 90s. Where I was lucky enough to, through a group of friends and common interest list, I just happened to be the first person to raise my hand and volunteer for one of the first INET workshops that took place in Vietnam in 1997. This was one of the first INET workshops. It started earlier, but this was one of the bigger events, and there was talk of having a Francophone side of the workshops, while in Kuala Lumpur there was an English edition. Some people were putting together the French track, and I raised my hand and said, I would like to volunteer for this. And this is how I got involved, and at that point met some of the people that, to this day, I'm still working with, one of them being Stefan Bortsmeier,
who's well known to all of us in DNS research. He does a huge amount of work. He's in IETF standards track. He's very active in this space, and also in Regext, in the EPP and RDAP related spaces, because he works in DNS management, registry, registrar spaces as well.
That's correct. And I don't actually remember if he was working for DNFR at the point, but so that was my initial outreach to this part of the industry. I mean, at this point, I'd only had contact to the internet on a hobby basis at home. Somebody had donated a Sun 3 workstation, and then I decided, okay, this is really fun. Ended up doing network training workshops in 97. I'd recently moved to Denmark for private reasons, and suddenly found myself in this entirely different universe with these crazy people who just traveled and ran workshops and also ran the internet, so to speak. And I think a couple of years later, I'd met Steve Huter from the Network Startup Resource Center.
Yep.
So that was about 99, I think, in San Jose, or 98. I don't remember. It might have been Geneva. And then at this point, I was really bitten, and I thought, okay, this is really fun. And I tried to volunteer on a yearly basis for some of those events. Ended up at the first AFNOG in Togo. No, not the first AFNOG. My first African Network Operators Group conference and workshop in 2002, and that was in Togo. In between, I'd done a lot of volunteering for Francophonie in and around West Africa, traveling to the region for these training workshops. And that got me involved with the Network Startup Resource Center, and which I started doing paid work for around 2008 or so, and was a contractor with the Network Startup Resource Center until this past year.
So there's a nice continuity of community-led organizations, not-for-profits, development. DNS OARC is slightly different in some ways. And so for people who don't really know what DNS OARC is, there's sort of three strands that come to mind. There's the collection side and the data repository, and we can perhaps talk about that and DITL. There's a software development side and some interesting tooling that DNS OARC has been working on. And there's a community. There's a group of people who are meeting. Your presence here is in part because you've been holding an OARC meeting hosted at Apricot. Shall we start there? Can you tell us a little bit about the OARC meeting and what's been happening?
Showing up at Apricot is a new thing for, I think, DNS OARC, in that, as you said, there's several aspects to it, and one of them is community. And what we were attempting by showing up at the Apricot conference and workshop was to extend our reach and try to bring the community, widen the community, and encourage participation from the Asia-Pacific region.
So DNS OARC is strong in North America and has a large European presence and engagement with Africa, but there are, relatively speaking, less participants in the Asia-Pacific footprint.
Well, not so much in Africa, but North America and Europe. I mean, there is a bit of a concentration on the Western Northern Hemisphere, for sure. And that's one of the things we're trying to remedy, or at least do something about. Because if we look at the routing world, and we look at the success that some of the NOGs have had in the Asia Pacific region, thanks to the work of, you know, people like Philip Smith and Gaurab. Several other people, of course. I'm not going to like recite all the names, but the nonstop work that's been happening over the past 25 years. And OARC is a little bit, I wouldn't say behind, but it hasn't been actively working to seek out members here in this part of the globe. And then, of course, there's, well, not only the members, but also the community in general. DNS has always been a kind of a this darker corner of the internet. It just happens to work, and the more you dig and you find out, wow, there's actually much more to it than we thought.
It's becoming a lot more important, relatively speaking. The impact of addressing and routing on reachability to resources has shifted massively, and names are probably now the primary vehicle, particularly for content steering. So names are not the dark corner anymore. Names are front and center.
And there's this recurring meme that, well, it's always the DNS.
Yes, let's put it in the DNS.
Let's put it in the DNS is one thing, and that's always, you know, the questionable discussion of whether or not this belongs in the DNS or not. And when there's an outage or a problem, the conclusion is it's always the DNS.
It is generally always the DNS. So for the meeting here, you weren't just bringing content from the recent OARC meeting that was held in the US. You actually had local content being presented, didn't you?
Right, so we had a mix of both, and the idea was, actually this happened because Philip Smith was suggesting, well, you know, if Oric wants to do something at Apricot, you know, we might be able to arrange a room for you. And that was actually something we hadn't directly thought about. We thought, well, that's a great idea. And so we organized on a rather short notice, reached out to some people from the region and other people while we were at Oric as well, which was only a few weeks ago, and trying to figure out who'd be local. Who'd be present locally, as we didn't want to have remote presentations and didn't want to just recycle content.
No, there's a different feel to a remote present. You need in-room activity.
Well, there's that. And since, you know, as Oric always does, all the entire set of materials and presentations for the conference was online. Oric participation to the events is a paid thing, but all the content and slides and videos are made available immediately after. So it would have been a little bit, why bother presenting something that people could just stream online? And instead, we decided to try and get some local participation. We did have some folks flying in from further away. Eric Ziegler from Domain Tools, who had not been to an Apricot workshop either, thought it was a good occasion to come and talk about trust in the DNS and the evolution of the DNS that used to be this simple protocol.
Oh, it's not simple anymore.
It's not simple anymore. And besides Eric, we had Swapnil Patnaikar, who's working out of India and doing a lot of research on DNS abuse and has his own company and doing working with various aspects of the DNS, did some presentation on the status of open resolvers. And it was an interesting discussion on open resolvers. Do we really need them at all? And there's two discussions, open resolvers and public resolvers.
Yeah.
And
I mean, by definition, a public resolver is an open resolver, but it's not linguistics. There are functional differences between something like 8.8.8.8, all ones, and people who just casually stand up a resolver and don't realize anyone can go there.
Intention, right. There's the
intentionality.
Intentionality. And I mean, there are some, you know, there are still some open resolvers out there that are run on a, I would say, non-accidental basis. I think this censorship-free DNS, which is run out by this gentleman, Thomas Rasmussen, who does a lot of work to try and offer to the community.
Sure.
But this is the kind of thing that also requires a lot of resources. So the discussion was about, you know, if you're running an open resolver, what are you going to be up against? And are you doing it on purpose? So what was the topic?
Yeah, and there's actually quite a strong measurement component in this, because finding open resolvers often actually consists of polling the global V4 address space, or the smart tricks to unpack which V6 addresses are active to uncover, are they active on port 43? So there's a whole range of measurement techniques that take place here. The other thing in DNS is, use of DNS for command and control systems often is constructing these names, DGA names, computationally based names that look like hash strings. And it's an interesting tension we've talked about on Ping before. You can't really ban these names because they could be being used as test names for software integration or for some other system we don't understand. But looking for the fingerprint of the hash names, wow, it's so revealing of potential botnet command and control systems. There is a lot of measurement in the DNS. So software, can you talk a little bit about the DNS OAuth software development side of things?
Right, so I think some years ago, as part of the Oric's mission, there was a number of software out there that people were using in terms of command line tools and libraries that were being used for both benchmarking or testing or even content generation and measurement. And some of these tools were either, I wouldn't say homeless, but they weren't actively maintained or, they needed writing. And what happened is, part of the Oric policy is try and, of course, bring useful tools to the community. Offer development to our members at, you know, preferential rates in some cases. And so some years ago, this I think is late 2010s, Jerry Lundstrom joined on. I mean, before this, it was Dwayne Wessel doing a lot of the work, of course.
Yes, Dwayne had a small enterprise he calls the Measurement Factory.
That's right.
And he developed quite an interesting suite of tools that wound up, I won't say a donation, but they became contribution in kind into DNS OAuth software repository and development, and also Casey Decchio's system, DNS Viz.
Right. So there's DNS Viz, which ended up being, I wouldn't say rehomed, but still is Casey's child. But definitely is running out of work at this point, and we're also having some ideas and thoughts about how to build upon that. And then, of course, all the tools that Duane developed, and DSC as well, the Domain Statistics Collector, which has found a new life, and some really improvement has taken place here in the last few years with Jerry's involvement.
So Jerry is able to leverage OARC meetings to do engagement, UX, what if with the community, and then works in software development and delivers back to the community the outcomes as code in Git repos and available source repositories, and also does the software development, the bug fixes, the extension of the technology.
He's pretty much a one-man army. Yes, he's very efficient, and yes, absolutely. There's engagement with the community, and some of the stuff, you know, is discussed more as a matter of internal policy. Where would we like to go with these tools? What would we like to do? And also, we also, as you may know, we run out of the DNS OARC and Mattermost chat server, which is very popular. This is actually one of the, I would say, strokes of genius, but this is one of the really brilliant modes of engagement, most brilliant modes of engagement we've had with the community, was to set up a chat server. The mailing list being super popular, obviously, DNS operations, but, and DNS jobs. But the Mattermost server allowed us to engage, of course, in this dopamine rewarding near real-time response, which allows us to have this meeting this morning.
So the investment in a software suite that provides live communication, it can be used one-on-one, it can be used for bug fix, to talk about observed problems, it's used for coordination between the community. That was one of OARC's original goals, was providing that trusted space for DNS operators to talk to each other. So Mattermost fits that really very well.
It allows to continue. I mean, there's two components to it. One of it, we even use it as the staff. We use it internally to coordinate. You know, this is our main collaboration tool, since OARC is a distributed organization with no real central location. But it was really a bright idea in that it allowed us to engage the community much more closely. And when we went hybrid with the during the COVID pandemic, it turns out that one of the successes of OARC was being able to run, first of all, these hybrid workshops like everybody, no, these, sorry, online-only workshops to start with, but when we were able to meet face-to-face again, the hybrid workshops were a real success with, in some cases, 60-70% remote participation. And rather than have these having the remote participants, as I would call it, second-tier citizens in most cases when you're behind some kind of Zoom chat, we had a real engagement from people who already knew each other in many cases. So there's a strength to that. We can't, of course, vouch for the experience for people who didn't really know anyone in the community, for newcomers, but for everybody who knew each other, there was active participation on the chat at a level that really allowed people to feel like they were getting something out of it. And, you know, side discussion about all the advantages and downsides of doing remote participation, but accessibility and visa questions and all that aside, having, you know, a live chat platform is really, really beneficial to running a more involved event, for sure.
So OARC, the community meetings, OARC software development, Jerry's work, OARC day in the life, DITL. Can you talk a little bit about this, the ideas behind this repository function that OARC has of holding a long history of data of the DNS?
Right, so this goes back some years where the being a member of OARC has a number of privileges with it. One of them is access, if one enters a data sharing agreement, to a repository of data, which some of it is member donated, some of it may be just a collection of root zone files going back over a number of years for historical research purposes. But then there's the DITL, as you say, the day in the life, and this is an effort to collect data, I think something between 48 and 72 hours of real-time data capture using either PCAP or DNSCAP, one of the OARC maintained tools, to collect data very close to some of the busiest resolvers and name servers, authoritative name servers on the internet, the idea being to offer researchers an insight. It's really a fire hose type of traffic.
I coordinated collection of inadra.arpa data from APNIC's IPv4 and IPv6 holdings, and constructing an environment that permitted data capture, holding of those packet dumps, and then uploading them to DITL, was quite a logistical burden. It takes real effort to organize doing that, but the value proposition here is really amazing. This is a long data set, isn't it? We're talking decades of data.
Yeah, I mean, I have to just check on the servers to see how many, if we're going at least 10 years back, yeah, at this point, it started in the early 2010s. I mean, this is something that goes back to, I mean, there's a funny story is that actually I was close to being involved with the NSO Arc in around 2009. There was an open position at this point, and I looked at the job description and talked to the powers that be, and we agreed there was a good match and realized it's just too much work to do for a single person. I'll have to pass. So I guess now I'm grown up enough that, you know, the role fits. But I remember absolutely being impressed by the data set and the collection abilities and the work that was being done there, and I thought it was fascinating already from that side of the fence. And I thought, wow, this is really something that has value. And obviously, there's also it's really difficult to catalog all this data and make it available. But to go back just a second to the ORC DNS Community Day we had here a few days ago, there was an interesting discussion between JPRS talking about MRoot deployment. And in the room, Jeff Houston asked some pointed questions about why are we adding more root servers where we could be just serving the root locally. And this is the kind of work that obviously, you know, DITL and all kinds of measurement efforts are supporting put your money where it's worth and why, you know.
Yeah, let's go look in the stack at the packet flows that are being seen by the root operators. And let's look at this data in detail to understand what's the diversity of query address, what's the label lookup rate, and then you do what ifs. If we had hyperlocal root, what would the effect be on this flow? And then do an experiment. And if you time that experiment with a DITL, you're actually going to get data capture that would allow you to see potentially a before after effect. So DITL is both a repository to look at the past and assess current situations and a mechanism to understand dynamics of change in the DNS and a mechanism to propose what would happen if we change the DNS. It's a huge, huge resource. How are you guys actually managing this data?
So, it's a really interesting discussion. I mean, 70% of NX domains is what we're seeing, and all this data that it's all buried in all this just giant mountain of data that we're collecting. And we're managing it right now in a more or less ad hoc fashion in that we store this, we have a very large Ceph, well, very large by some measure, Ceph storage cluster, which is being populated with all this data moving out from some historical smaller machines and trying to concentrate this in one large storage.
So Ceph is a distributed file store design, which has resiliency kind of baked in underneath. It allows you to include new points of hard drive backed by a computer and make them part of the logical backing of that data set. So you're not exposed to a single point of failure. You have distributed elements supporting this material.
Yes, totally. I mean, we historically were using some old NFS servers that were, you know, discrete machines, and then there was always the risk of losing a RAID and all that. And then at some point, some 4 or 5 years ago, and that's actually one of my interests, is I've been building distributed storage for a number of years, ORC decided to start going towards this kind of self-healing distributed storage technology. And this is just exactly spot on what we needed for the data storage at DNS ORC. So all these data traces are organized by year and by name server type, by organization. So there is some structure. Some of our members have been complaining that, well, the data is not exactly labeled, doesn't have the right metadata, and doesn't necessarily have explicit descriptions of how this can be used, where it comes from, and all that. And that's something we need to work on.
Yeah. Some of the data comes with conditionality of access. The general principle here is that you must sign a data sharing agreement with OARC, and that places limits on what you can do. It's a safe space, a clean room that you work inside, but the information that comes out of the room needs to be more carefully understood. It's condensed, it's aggregated. You're really not there to go and look in a packet and say, Joe Blow over here in Canada was looking at this URL. You're coming out saying, we saw 1,000 people in Canada looking at a range of URLs. It's that kind of a behavior, isn't it?
Right, so data anonymization, I mean, is something you know about quite a lot. And this is, of course, one of our concerns is both A, that the data being submitted doesn't have identifiable information, and some of the tools we develop have built-in support for, you know, anonymizing optimizing these IP addresses as best possible. I remember some years ago, this Yahoo was releasing some data set they thought that anonymized, and it took less than a day for somebody to identify this woman in Texas about based on her browsing habits.
It's really quite interesting the journey we have gone through with internet addresses, because we entered the room saying they're not PII, personally identifying information, and we've kind of exited that period, and we now recognize they're part of a surface of information about a person that helps identify you in place and time. We have to be so careful.
So there's that double issue. There's a general responsibility towards the public, because the data being collected, especially when you're looking at a resolver, you're seeing all this traffic that, I mean, the people who are using, internet users who are using a given resolver don't necessarily A, have knowledge they're doing so, B, their consent is kind of implicit that you're using the, you know, something like DITL or any other data collection, implicitly you're collecting user data. And I think there's also a little bit of a gray area there about how end users are known that this data will be used for research purposes or just generally are collected.
It's really hard to get consent at scale across the entire surface of the internet.
And there is very likely some general user agreement when you sign up for an ISP. I mean,
oh, sure, it's buried in the SLA.
It's buried in the, yeah. And what I wanted to get at was, so all this data is being collected, and one of the strengths of the DNS OAuth model is, of course, having accessibility to this data. One of the, and that's what makes people feel that it's a safe space as you describe it. There's a trust element to it that also for new members to join, they have to be vetted by the board. But we'd like to do more with this data. We'd like to bring in outside research. We'd love to have our own resident researcher. But those are expensive types.
Budget constraints. The other part of this story is that there's reproducibility. There's a crisis in science at large that people make huge, bold assertions. And the question that comes to mind is, can I achieve the same outcome? And the great beauty of DITL data is, well, if you go into DITL, the data we worked from is there. Do what you think is the way to model this behavior. You tell me if you get to the same outcome. It's a vehicle for doing science.
Oh, totally. I mean, reproducibility is definitely the greatest crisis, I would say, that modern science has seen recently. And I think with the whole publisher perish and the way that funding works and that kind of in this research, that absolutely, yeah, the bold claims you're talking about, unfortunately, seems to be more the norm than the exception. And we'd like to be neutral. And this is exactly why, you know, the role of DNS OAuth is to be this neutral organization, to not be vendor influenced, to not be lobbied by any particular vendors. And I say, you know, three things that use three categorizations of DNS OAuth. I'd say researchers, operators, and developers are the three. Again, it comes in threes, are three types of members, really active members. And this is where it's super valuable, is that the researchers can, of course, do the math, figure out, is this worth our time? Are we seeing what we expect? Some of the work on IPv6 and fragmentation and DNS was really, you know, interesting at OAuth 42. Seeing veteran members of the DNS community raise their eyebrows at the end of a talk and say, wow, I just learned something about TTLs is always enlightenment.
Yeah, but the other two arcs here, the operators, they're in a position to get information and knowledge about provisioning and scale.
And that's the whole thing. The ecosystem works so well. And this is why, even though we're such a niche in, you know, technology, seen at least from the outside, but we have so much impact and so much outreach, I mean, so much ramifications from the DNS. It shows, the researchers are doing this work, the operators are benefiting from it, and again, it's one thing, we have a standard setting body, we have the IETF, and those protocols are being written, and it's very interesting to see, okay, how does it actually work on the wire? Oh, everybody has the assumption that once the TTL is at zero, it's gone. Are you kidding?
No.
Do you want to see how many, all those ways that, you know, the half-life.
Oh, the data lives forever.
The half-life of DNS data.
Yeah.
Repeat queries or just things living in, like, oh, I didn't know you had a cache in that client there. Oh, why is that? And, you know, it makes for interesting side effects. And it makes for absolutely fascinating research. And operationally, it's just very interesting to see the vendors and the operators looking at each other and just nodding and going, okay, I get this. We really have to fix
and
that.
And so that impetus to look at behaviors in system and vendors, coders, developers to come back in and say, okay, reflecting on the data we're seeing here, the conversation in OAuth, we're going to change our behavior in the software base.
And there is, I would say, to some extent, and this is maybe a little bit of a political statement, if you look at, for example, routing, I mean, we always joke that BGP was never a routing protocol. It's a policy setting protocol. DNS maybe doesn't suffer as much from this. It's much more pragmatic. And the circle of life, as I call it, between the research, the development, and the operators is a much more tight-knit and flowing community where people really act on things and there's less, you don't have as much dithering about, okay, obviously, there's choices being made, and when you listen to some of the suggestions about why don't we just, you know, let's turn off the root servers and go hyperlocal for everyone.
Yeah.
Those, of course, are opinions, and there's matters of security and stability of the internet. But generally, there's a very tight flow, which is means that change comes fast in the DNS world. We're able to implement things that I would say other communities maybe only dream of having this reactiveness that we have.
So the other part of the DNS compared to some technology is that DNS is in quite a small number of hands for affecting change. There are 13 root operators, and then there are a collection of public resolvers, and there are the ISPs. There's really only 100,000 ASs out there. They operate resolvers. If you want to affect change, it's a community of probably 200,000 people to talk to. Sounds big, but imagine making change that takes place on the desktop or in the handset. You are dealing with only one or two vendors, but you're looking at 2 billion people having to get that upgrade to affect change led in the client. DNS is quite central to the arc of behavior here. So it's an interesting place to be. There is a component of the DITL story that I think starts to run into emerging new DNS. Jeff gave a talk yesterday about the penumbra and about the shift to fully encrypted end-to-end communication. And DITL is a packet capture that takes place not entirely at the end. So does this present potential future problems for the nature of packet capture as a model of DNS behavior?
Well, the typical, I would say, passive monitoring that we're seeing that also a lot of organizations are depending on for security reasons, modeling client behavior, finding out about CNCs and security compromises. And there's a lot there's been a lot of discussion about DOH and whether or not it was the right way to go. I mean, I'm on the side of the table where I say this was bound to happen.
Yeah.
And
we're not really pushing back against anything we can prevent here. We're just observing change is coming.
Change is coming. So, I mean, when you're looking at technologies like DNSTAP, being able to instrument the name servers to get this information, of course, is one solution, but it also means that...
So that is a model where you move the arc of data collection from on the wire into packet capture closer to the head point, which is after the decrypt, and it would provide an information flow coming perhaps from a XDA, eBPF feed on the host, so that you are able to see inside the query and know the nature of the query?
Right, and this is really important to clarify for those who are listening that in this case, you say after decryption. I mean, this is, even though your DNS is encrypted, say using DOH or DOT or DOQ, of course, at one point you have to hit a resolver. So we're talking about the willful participation of participants. It's not like there's some magic way to decrypt the data.
No, this is the necessary unencrypted data flow that has to exist for a resolver to do its job.
Just like doing, just doing traffic analysis on HTTP traffic on a web server. This is after the decryption takes place. Obviously, it means there's a necessity to have more involvement from the operators. We can't just say, can you set us a PCAP of your DNS traffic?
Yeah.
In this case, they have to do more work. They have to be more involved. We're not talking about simple port mirroring or DNS tap. So, I mean, DNS cap, sorry. So obviously there's that, and we're losing transparency into the process. And DITL will become more challenging. But then again, we're not the only industry or the only actor that's going to be suffering from this. There's a large part of the ecosystem that's a little bit, dismayed. And one of them, of course, being Paul Vixie, who says, well, I want to see what's going on in my network.
Yeah.
And
my network, my rules is actually a really important component here. People who operate infrastructure have massive liability and risk, and they need an ability to understand the nature of use of their investment.
And that actually brings a really interesting side discussion, probably for another topic, is where is the network boundary?
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about zero trust, is the network your laptop and the cable up to the hub, or is it the entire organization? But we're getting to a point where I would say in light of RFC what is it, the post-Snowden 77258, I can't remember which one, but the whole let's encrypt everything has, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We're reaping, of course, what we sowed and the consequence of that. And I you know, I'm a little bit on the fence about this because we know that, of course, encryption does help. It's just that in terms of nation states wanting to do what they need to do and the civil society and the politicians acting always, you know, say, oh, we need less encryption. They're trying to solve real problems as well. And when we have the systematic approach to encryption, all we're doing is we're pushing things at the edge. And I'm always reminded of this XKCD drawing, which is the theory of encryption. The reality is hit him with a $5 wrench.
Yeah. But nonetheless, for the scientists, the researchers, the people who are using packet flows as a fundamental for reproducible work, OARC is going to have to stand up and say, well, here's how we adjust our view of long-term data collection to take account of the encryption component. There are other models. So ICANN and LROOT have invested in the development of CBOR-based CDNS higher level data capture. It isn't the same as a packet capture. It's possible to recreate an on-the-wire state, but it's not the one that actually came off the wire. And I think OARC stands as a mechanistic way of actually understanding the intersection of DNS on port 53 and packet behaviors in the network. It's really interesting how things work there, particularly around things like fragmentation and IPv6.
Right. And there are some efforts. I know other organizations are also working. The DNS Research Foundation just presented a framework for resolver instrumentation at ORG42 that was commissioned by ICANN. And so, I think, I mean, of course, we're seeing novel methods. There's, as you were mentioning, sampling versus measurement and the ability to get some insight from a flow of data, of packets that you don't necessarily have the contents of. But I'm thinking in terms of heuristics, if you've been talking about DPI for years, here's an actual possible use of AI to work on data sets and find patterns and things like that. And obviously, we're never going to get the same level of detail or able to even access the specifics of, oh, you know, was TC set to one in this particular packet?
No, but the probabilistic behaviors of the system will be part of the machine learning model, and it actually will still deliver the outcome we need, which is, what is the DNS doing?
Right, and I think, of course, I'm kind of, this is not the knight in shining armor that's going to rescue us. I mean, there's realities are evolving. We have encryption much more pervasively, which, for better or worse, mostly it's a good thing. And but it does have its impact. The research aspect, of course, is suffering. And as Jeff was saying yesterday during his talk, the commoditization of the internet and the resulting transition from internet plumbers to internet sewers.
Yeah.
We're just carrying sludge around. We have no idea what's in there.
But the thing for me that stands out is that OARC is here for the community. And so OARC will be a vehicle for research in DNS, a vehicle for exploring DNS, for measuring DNS, for constructing theories and statements in DNS. And that's not going to change just because the network goes dark.
And we have a very innovative and we have a really creative community. And this is, of course, have to remember that OARC itself does not do any measurement. I mean, we wish we do a little bit more research and insight into our data, and curation work is overdue, but we don't actively do those measurements. We are facilitators and we provide the platform and the community for this to happen.
Yeah, it's the space for these things to happen.
And we have very high confidence in that our members will find to work around some of these problems and continue to be relevant in the DNS space going forward. And this is why we have these events and these conferences, is to push the boundary of DNS research and to also keep things relevant in a space where things are evolving quickly. There's definitely a consolidation aspect and centralization of services, and the question of whether CDNs own the internet at this point is, of course, also an interesting debate. But the DNS is always going to be there at some level, and whether it's called DNS 2.0, as my colleague Dinesh says, we're not the ones to be making the judgment. We're the ones to put forward the platform and the
yeah,
forum for
provide the space for the conversation.
Yes.
That lets the researchers, the operators, and the vendors come together and understand what do we actually want to do in names here.
Right, and you know, just like anybody else, every time somebody mentions blockchain DNS, I have a smile on my face. But then I'm saying, well,
I tend to the frown side. I'm not a smile guy when it comes
to
the blockchain.
Well, I'll just nod and say, well, let them come and make their case.
Yeah. So when will the next OARC meeting be held?
So that's a good question. We are, as part of our agreement with ICANN, we will co-host this with the next ICANN DNS forum.
Right.
DNS symposium. Last one took place in Vietnam, OARC 41. So OARC 43 should be happening, drum roll, sometime after the summer. And we haven't been informed yet, and neither does, I don't think ICANN knows yet where they're going to hold that event.
So it's a watch this space, but it'll be a colo with ICANN.
Yes.
Held around the spring summer window.
Well, more like the summer fall, because we
summer,
just had
fall.
Sorry,
Southern Hemisphere. I always get confused about these things.
There you go. And then where it's going to be, I can with pretty high level of certainty say it won't be in Europe and won't be in North America.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be in Europe, but there's a fair chance it'll be somewhere on another continent.
Well, we'll see how things work out. Phil, it's been absolutely fascinating. Thanks for coming on Ping and talking about the DNS.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'll make sure that there are URLs in the blog article that point to DNS OARC and any outcome of the meeting that was held here in Apricot, and general resources like the tools that have been developed by OARC, and also the membership page in case you'd like to become an OARC member.
Thank you.
If you've got a story or research to share here on Ping, why not get in contact by email to ping@apnic.net or via the APNIC social media channels. Also, remember the Measurement at APNIC.net mailing list on Orbit is there to discuss and share relevant collaborative opportunities, grants and funding opportunities, jobs and graduate placings, or to seek feedback from the community on your own measurement projects. Be sure to check out the APNIC website for all your resource and community needs. Until next time.